From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made earlier this week when a major Hollywood star turned down a job. Actress Jamila Jamil, who plays Tahani on NBC's The Good Place, was offered a role where she was asked to play a woman who is deaf. Jamil was born partially deaf herself, but now she can hear. And she turned down the role, saying, quote, "I said it wouldn't be appropriate for me to take that role, and they should find a brilliant deaf woman to play that role. I think you have to make those choices and not be too greedy and make space rather than take space." She added, quote, "I don't want to be part of erasure," end quote. Now, Jamil is one of a number of high-profile actors who have recently rejected roles where they would have portrayed people with disabilities. The industry has been criticized over the last several years for not being inclusive. Earlier this month, Bryan Cranston faced criticism for playing a character who uses a wheelchair in the film The Upside. And that's just one example. So, are we moving in the right direction? Is the rest of the workforce moving in the right direction? In Rochester, a report released last month revealed that poverty is disproportionately affecting people who have disabilities. According to that report, people with disabilities in our area are more likely to be unemployed, work in low-paying industries, and earn significantly less than their colleagues. They don't usually have a lot of options. Well, we continue our dialogue on Disabilities Week here with a conversation about employment disparities and employment discrimination for people with various disabilities. And our guests this hour help us understand what's happening in our area. They'll share their ideas for how to create more inclusive workplaces. Joining us in the studio, the Vice President of Employment at Rochester Rehabilitation, Sarah Taylor. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us is Joe Robinson, who is a veteran and a peer job coach at Rochester Rehabilitation. Joe, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. And David Witkowitz is a veteran and a data entry specialist at Rochester Rehabilitation. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
Well, sir, why don't you tell us off the bat what Rochester Rehabilitation does and the community you serve first and foremost.
Okay. Rochester Rehabilitation has been around since the early 1900s, and we have a variety of services. Particularly the division that I oversee is an employment division that prepares individuals for competitive employment through job readiness, job placement, training. We just completed a document scanning training program, and we also have a business arm where we employ individuals with or without disabilities and a wide range of services. We have manufacturing, data entry services, document scanning services, as well as janitorial services. And companies will outsource their work to us. So we're on the business arm of hiring, as well as preparing individuals for competitive employment.
One of the things I want to make sure we have a conversation about this hour is how we view the range of possible employment and how that range can get broader, how we can take opportunities and make sure that we expand them to entire populations. And, you know, it wasn't perfectly apples to apples, but we wanted to open the conversation this hour with just with those the news that a lot of people are discussing, Sarah. You know, you look at Hollywood. You know, there's an actor, Bryan Cranston, as an actor who does not have a physical disability. He's playing someone with quadriplegia. He says it was a business decision. The studio wanted a big name actor, and so they didn't hire someone who has a disability. They hired me, and I can learn the role. Whereas you have a star like Jamila Jamil say, I don't want to take on the role of playing a person who's deaf because there are people who are deaf who could do that role, and I don't want to participate in taking a job away and limiting the pool. How do you view that conversation?
Well, I think it's an important conversation to have because we need more individuals in a position such as celebrities, yep, or athletes that may take a stand for something. We have individuals that continue to be excluded from competitive employment opportunities, and we need to have a stronger voice and advocacy at all levels. So I commend individuals when they're in a position, an actress, a celebrity, that will take a stand, because the more education and the more awareness that we can bring to the topic, because we work with thousands of individuals a year that have abilities, and unfortunately, there's still so much work to be done when it comes to discriminatory practices and being excluded from positions that they're highly qualified for.
Let's kind of peel back into the roots of why that's the case. Why do you think our society is this way, particularly in this country where we limit opportunity, where we exclude instead of include? What has sort of created that?
I think we're still struggling with unconscious biases at all levels, perception, stereotype, stigmas, and lack of education, a combination. We have to continue to educate the community, particularly employers, corporate employers, the individuals that we work with every day can do more than cleaning and food service. We have many individuals that are highly qualified in attitudes. So more unconscious biasness, more inclusive training for employers, employers that are getting tax credits and breaks from the government. We have to get in and continue to educate.
Well, let's talk to Joe and David about their stories. And I see our phone ringing. And listeners, if you want to join the conversation as we talk about what real inclusive employment looks like, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. So, Joe, a veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps, yes, sir?
Yes, sir.
Where and get rid of that mic for me and tell me your story. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Buffalo, in the inner city of Buffalo. I had a mother and father. Was given chores and started working at an early age in grocery stores, mowing grass, had a paper route and doing things like that. At 17, I entered into the Marine Corps, and I was in the Caribbean, actually. I was in the Cuban crisis, Santo Domingo, and small skirmishes down in that area. I came to Rochester in 2008 from the VA, and I went to the VOA for assistance, and they sent me over to Rochester Rehabilitation Center, where I had job readiness training, and I was given the opportunity to volunteer there, and I worked from being a volunteer into a receptionist, and I worked for a while, and then I wanted to retire. I'm 75 years old, so I wanted to retire, and that was a few years ago. Then I decided to come back to work, so I got my resume together, put on a suit and tie, and went to a job fair, and I ran into Miss Taylor. And she asked me, Joe, what are you doing here? I said, I want to come back to work. So she gave me the opportunity to come back to work, and I started in production, and then I wound up in being a inspector in production, and now I'm a peer job coach, where I work with individuals who were previously on DHS who are now trying to find self-sufficiency through working. And it's a pleasure working in that field because I've been in situations where I wasn't able to be self-sufficient and I got the help, and now to give back is a good thing. But getting into the veterans, as far as veterans are viewed a lot of time as individuals who have some skills, but they might have problems due to combat situations. And I think people need to take another look at veterans because they all had jobs when they were in the military, and their assets, they meet challenges. People use disabilities, but everybody has challenges. And we as veterans were able to work through those challenges, and so many times we are an asset to a company instead of a liability. People might look at you limp, or they might view the unseen challenges that you have, which we all have. And if you don't have a challenge or disability right now because you're young and vibrant, believe me, when you get my age or coming into my age, you will have one. So I think that we need to look at people in a positive way and give people chances. You know, we have choices. When somebody walks in the door, if you're a hiring manager, to look at that person and say, you know what, he might be able to do this job, or with accommodations, he might be able to make the company grow, you know. And when you can walk into a company and look at somebody that looks like you, no matter who you are, that gives you a feeling I might fit in, you know. I think about Miss Taylor yesterday. We had a graduating class from the scanning, and she was taking a picture with that class. She said, look at here. We have a variety of people here from all over. We had a Sudanese woman. We had a woman from the Far East. We had black Americans. We had white Americans. She said, look at the rainbow we have here. And it's so good to come in a company when you can see a rainbow and you can feel, you know, I'd like to work here, because they have people of different ethnicities and people, you know, that I can blend in with, you know.
He's a tremendous spokesperson for the organization, Miss Taylor, to use his phrase there. Amazing story. And Joe, you know, yourself, you say that you can relate when people feel the frustration, when people feel like, so did you run up against, would you call it discrimination, job discrimination, after your career in the Marines?
Well, I, you know, when I got out, I went right into the steel mills, and I was younger then, and they had older men then in the mills, and they used to call me young blood. Young blood, you're not going to be able to keep up with us. And, you know, it was terribly hot in there and really tough work. And like anything that's tough, a lot of times you wonder, can you make it? But I had the inside of me from growing up, and my dad was a construction worker, and he was a tough guy, and I had chores to do. I learned how to go through tough times, you know, and I wound up working laborer in the pit, and I wound up on the second floor where we did furnace work, and then I wound up being a supervisor. So just like my journey with Rochester Rehab, I started volunteering, and I worked up to different positions. And today, a lot of people don't want to start from the bottom, you know, and I learned you can come in a door and be a janitor, and if you're aggressive enough and you do a good job, you can work up to be a supervisor. So, you know, my lesson in life is, you know, to have the motivation to do that, you know.
Joe, there are a lot of American men and women who've served in the armed forces who are trying to enter a civilian workforce, people who have had careers much like yourself. And you're right, there are so many who have different challenges. We might call them, you know, physical disabilities, sometimes PTSD and other challenges. Did you emerge from your career relatively unscathed? Do you have challenges that you carry with you?
Oh, I have challenges. I have a triple bypass. I got a knee replacement. You can say I'm the bionic man, but I, you know, and people tell me, you know, why are you still working? One, because of economics. Two, because it's so good to be able to get up in the morning and have some kind of purpose. You know, you can lay in the bed and look at TV, but to have some purpose, you know, to get up, I get up and say my prayer. I exercise every morning and prepare myself to come to work and try to do a good job. And that gives you purpose and meaning in life, you know? That's why I'm still working. And I think I'll work till I die. But it's, I think that we do ourselves a disservice when we see people that maybe have a limp, or somebody with a cane, or somebody with a part of the body missing, and thinking, you know, I don't want to be around them, or I don't want to deal with that individual, because you don't know that individual, and you don't know what that individual can do. and bring value to a company or bring value to your life, you know. And you limit yourself, you know, to not give that person a chance. And that's the way I view things.
Sarah Taylor, Vice President of Employment at Rochester Rehabilitation. Can you add to that point there, this idea that whether it's a physical limp, the use of a wheelchair, other kinds of maybe ailments, disabilities, et cetera, that we could outright see what you want employers to think about when they are making decisions? Because, you know, Joe's talking very, you know, sort of pointedly about mm-hmm. some of the discrimination that may exist there. What would you say?
Well, I think from a perspective of partnering with companies and employers, I always tell individuals to personalize things. If it was your child walking in the door looking for a job, if it was you, you or I could have a car accident and have a brain injury and have to go through rehabilitation and go back to the workforce. So really being able to put yourself in an individual's shoes and understanding and really looking at, if we're helping someone fill out an application for your company, you can trust that as a vocational training provider, we're going to make sure that that person meets all the job functionings and the requirements to fulfill the position. So I say to employers every day, you have to be willing to give people a chance, and you have to be willing to move beyond the comfort zone and the norm of what you know or what you think you know.
I want to hit on, before we turn and hear David's story, I want to ask you about some of the items that producer Megan Mack compiled for this, which is, these are really eye-opening items here that we're about to go through. So listen to this. This is from CBS News about stigma and unconscious bias factoring in to who gets hired. So Rutgers University researchers found in a field experiment, and you're already mm-hmm. nodding right there.
Yeah.
Yep. So they sent out job applications for more than 6,000 fictional accounting positions. 2/3 of the applicants disclosed their disabilities, a spinal cord injury or Asperger syndrome, in their cover letters. 1/3 did not mention having a disability. Now, keep in mind, those disabilities would not interfere with the accounting work done, and the applicants were otherwise all equally qualified. The applicants with disabilities received 26% fewer responses from employers, even though the actual disability doesn't matter. I mean, I hope no one's hearing this program thinking, well, if someone, you know, had a spinal cord injury, you know, that they may not get job lifting heavy items. That's not what this is about. This is about jobs that people can do, but employers won't hire. That the concern I have reading this story, Sarah, is who's going to want to disclose? And then number one, if you're not disclosing, you feel like there might be something wrong or stigmatizing about it. There's so many things that kind of come out of that. What do you make of that?
Well, I think we see it every day. And when we're helping someone find a job, we really, Evan, have to focus on the skill sets. Can the individual fulfill the position and the strengths? Because we know, based on our experience and all the statistics around the nation and locally, in the exact statistics that you cited, but Rutgers University, this is reality. This is reality every day for the individuals we work with. And if individually openly disclose all the time, we would never allow them the opportunities as a nation to walk through the doors. So many individuals do not disclose because of the facts that we see in the statistics of how hard it is to get through the door when they do disclose.
All right. As part of that same report, listen to this. The state of employment for people with disabilities in the United States. You know, last year on Connections, we brought in former Senator Tom Harkin, who was part of the movement to help pass the ADA in July of 1990, signed by President George H.W. Bush. So this idea that, what are we, almost 30 years on from the ADA, well, it had to be a sea change. Here's the CBS News report. Quote, the share of adults with disabilities who are working by some measure has not improved since the ADA was passed in July 1990. When the law was signed, about half of disabled Americans were employed. a share that declined to 41% by 2010, according to census data. Ironically, some economists suggest the ADA may have made it less likely for employers to hire people with disabilities because of the costs they fear they might incur for providing accommodations. However, CNN is now reporting that with official unemployment rates at low levels now, fewer people are said to be looking for jobs, and more employers are having a hard time finding qualified people to fill positions, and they are more open to people with disabilities. So number one, that's really hard to hear that since 1990, the ADA, which was all about changing employment opportunities, hasn't, you know, made that much of a move for various reasons. And then that it takes a situation like we have now to maybe open the doors. But are the doors more open now? Do you sense they are, Sarah, for people with disabilities?
I think there's more advocacy and more willingness to partner with some companies. I think as a community, particularly the Rochester community, we have strong advocacy for individuals with disabilities. However, it's going to take more employers to not just say it from the CEO perspective. We believe in diversity and inclusion. Well, your numbers don't tell me that. So I think we have a long way to go. We're really good about advocacy and education, but we need to turn that into actual jobs. And again, as I can emphasize, jobs from the top down, not just basic jobs. Any job is a good job, depending on where the person is. If it fulfills them, it's person-centered and it meets their skill set. But we also need to think about careers, career advancements and opportunities, not just getting individuals in the door. How can we help them advance their careers? So we have a long way to go. I think the ADA was good. Back in the 90s when it was, you know, implemented and the laws, but we still need to continue legislation, advocacy, policies, and that dialogue with companies to say, okay, where are you? Are you measuring your numbers? Are you offering training opportunities and partnership opportunities? One of the things that we have implemented at Rochester Rehabilitation, we started 3 years ago, the first of its kind, Employment First Conference, where we bring employers and job readiness providers to say, how can we move the dial? How can we improve our numbers? How can we educate you about tax credits, about reasonable accommodations? As you said, many employers fear, oh, it's going to cost me a lot of money, without even knowing what it is going to cost them to employ someone that may be needing some type of accommodations. So just opening up the door for partnerships for companies to come to the table to say, I want to at least try. I want to at least partner with you to pilot a program or pilot employment opportunities. And that's what we're looking for. Just that door to open to say, I want to at least try. I want to educate my company from middle management to upper management to front door receptionists that will greet someone that's walking into the door.
I think you're touching on sort of this important evolution, though, because maybe you go from no real awareness to knowing how to say the right things. Oh, you know, we care about diversity. You know, it's part of some sort of a handbook or a mantra to action. And I wonder if, are we stuck on that middle step too often now? Do you hear companies say, like you mentioned, the CEO saying, oh, you know, we care about diversity of hiring, et cetera. It's easy to say that. Are we more often stuck there as opposed to the action step of making change?
We are stuck. We are stuck with quicksand. We are stuck with super. We are just stuck. And I see it, you know, from all different levels when we talk about diversity and inclusion. Everyone wants to say the politically correct language. Everyone wants to believe their company believes in social responsibility. But the reality is your numbers tell me something different. The way your corporation looks tells me something different. So again, we have to get past the talk and really put it into action. And we're really stuck there. I mean, when you talk about diversity and inclusion, whether you're talking about individuals with disabilities or we're talking about racial diversity, it's a topic that's very, very uncomfortable. But we have to be willing to have that conversation more than just a conversation to really put some action steps in place that will move the dial.
Yeah, this reminds me of a conversation I had with a pastor of a Rochester church who I was surprised when I looked up a lot of his writing and website didn't use the words social justice because it's a church that has a reputation for doing a lot of work. And he said, you know, I'm wary of having just a slogan. I don't want to be the church with the slogan. I want to be the church that does the work. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's a really interesting idea. Don't just put a marketing slogan. Go do the work. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of lines up with what Sarah's saying. Joe, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
One more thing before Dave gets it.
Yeah.
I like to bring the veteran back into this because
being
a veteran, my friend Dave is a veteran and is hundreds of thousands of veterans, millions. I think we put our life on the line. I think that we came back home with different injuries, whether they be physically or intellectually. And I think that we could say they owe us, but I would like to say, give us a chance. Give us an opportunity. And you will see an employee that's dedicated, one that's on time, reliable, and is trainable. And if you think about that, that's an asset for a company. So I think they need to think about what the veterans have done for the country and how they should give them chances and give them choices and opportunities.
All right. Well, well said. And after our only break of the hour, we're going to talk to another veteran, David Witkowitz, about his story, about the work that he's doing now and how he views these issues, both as a member of Rochester Rehabilitation and a member of our community. So let's get that only break. It's the Dialogue on Disabilities right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, you might have heard the governor's State of the State on Tuesday. We're going to talk to members of the Assembly. Harry Bronson and Marjorie Burns will join us talking about gender and other legislative issues that are high priorities in Albany. Then in our second hour, the Rochester Historical Society has more than 200,000 objects related to Rochester's history. What happens if the organization closes? We discuss it. Welcome back to Connections. I want to turn to David Witkowitz, who's a veteran and a data entry specialist at Rochester Rehabilitation. And I asked Joe, I'll ask you the same question I asked Joe. Where did you grow up, and what led you to your service career?
Well, I grew up in Rochester, New York, and grew up in a family that had some problems, and it developed that I inherited some of those mental health problems. And like when I was in third grade, the sister at the Catholic school said, Dave has problems. He needs to get some help. So they sent me to Strong, and they said, yep, he could use some help. My father said, no. There's a stigma attached to people with mental health disabilities. Mm. And so I didn't get mental health help at that point and did get on through school. And when I graduated high school, Vietnam was going strong back in 67. And when I passed the physical for a draft board, I thought, geez, I want to do something. I don't want to end up having somebody shooting at me and me having to shoot at somebody else. That wasn't the kind of thing I was looking for. And so I enlisted in the Coast Guard. And once I got in the Coast Guard, I had my mind made up, when I get out, I'm going to make use of the GI Bill. And so I did. And part of that was me being very gung-ho at first. I started college full-time and worked full-time. Got by in a couple hours sleep at night and had a big grade average. And after about a year, I couldn't do that. I ended up having a breakdown and having to be put on some medication. But I continued to push myself to get through college. Did get a bachelor's degree from Brockport. And a little frustrated after I graduated because I was trying to find work. And I was only finding work like for cleaning positions and stuff like that. And I felt, well, maybe that's because they see that I have an anxiety disorder and that's the kind of work I can do. And that was a little bit frustrating, but then with help from Rochester Rehab, I was able to get into doing clerical work. And I thought, great, you know, this I feel is more like putting to use the education that I have. And Sarah said, I'm a data entry specialist, and I get to do a little bit of everything over there. I come in and I set up the reception desk because I get there before the receptionist starts in the morning. And then, as Sarah mentioned, we have a production unit, and they have timesheets that they fill out every day and punch in and out of. And so I get all those timesheets to do all that entry for payroll. And then they set me up with a desk in the chart room. And so I make up the charts for the different programs and do filing of documents into those charts. And I feel that was a really good fit for me because I do have good organizational skills where, you know, someone could go in there and if they're looking for something, they could find it real quickly.
Let me, before we continue with David's story, I just want to turn to Sarah and make an important point here. When you hear our guests saying, you know, limitations, sort of a narrow range of fields for people in, with various disabilities or challenges, including food service and janitorial work, that does not diminish the dignity and the importance of those jobs. It's an indication of how society views a narrow range of where people might, quote, fit at work. Is that fair, Sarah?
Absolutely. Again, we all need janitorial services in our companies. So as you said, we're not diminishing the job because for someone, it's a valued position that they qualify for. But looking beyond certain positions and industries, I think it's very important as we, as job readiness providers and education providers, that we are training individuals that we work with to meet industry demands. So as we talk about healthcare industry jobs, as we talk about photonics in the community, as we talk about advanced manufacturing in the community, in other technology positions, information technology, these are also careers that should be open and employers should be willing to embrace diverse populations and give individuals chances.
All right. So on that subject, I'll work in a phone call because I know time is tight for some of our callers. Bernard in Fairport. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yeah, I like this topic. I went, in the 70s, I hired a blind girl to run my computer systems. And the reality is that I had to buy her a special device to do it, but it wasn't very expensive. But I think the thing that I got out of it is she was very good about doing it and motivated to do it. And the other thing that was very nice is the other staff worked with her. So it was just very benefit. Now, she eventually decided she didn't like to do it, so she left. But I think it was a benefit to me that, you know, she had this, and she was very good for me. And then, of course, the other good thing for me is I was told I was going blind in 1984. So what I did is I took my family to Hong Kong to get through with my career, and I managed to get through for the last 10 or whatever years to do that. So I think there are benefits, and I, you know, this disabled thing is one way to say it, but I think it's a challenge, and I think there's a benefit to it. And again, when I was blind, I was very good about documenting things. Like the last person, she said, he said that, you know, he could had the information for people. And I thought that was one of my benefits, is because I had to take care of myself so I could take care of other people.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my statement. Thank you very much.
Bernard, thank you. Thanks for the phone call. And a profound statement reminding employers, Sarah, that that people with various challenges, if they are working through these challenges, sometimes these acute challenges, that actually strengthens the assets they may bring to a company, yeah?
Absolutely. And we do locally have some champion companies. As our employment conferences go forth each year, Wegmans has been a sponsor of the conference and one of the companies in this community that has been a champion for individuals with disabilities, as well as the University of Rochester Medical Center. So having champions in the community that are stepping up and saying, we embrace inclusion, look at the diversity that we have throughout our companies, from an office setting to a front-end setting to a warehouse setting to computer room setting, that diversity is important. And looking at that individual's strengths and giving them an opportunity is important.
Now, David, you mentioned that your mental health challenge is anxiety. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, and so you know, early in life, you know, there were indications, and I know you didn't necessarily get the treatment or getting it medically addressed, perhaps as early as it could have. But do you feel now that it is it's the kind of challenge that employers may understand less than someone who actually has a physical disability that they can see? Because people can't necessarily see the anxiety, they may view it differently. How do you feel that?
I think that's there's probably a lot to that. And I know when I was talking, I want to backtrack myself a little bit, that I mentioned I was frustrated at just being able to get like janitorial work. And I had nothing against that, but the only feeling I had was I didn't go through 4 years of college to get a bachelor's degree to do this work. And so that's why I felt like I needed to get onto something else. But yes, I do think, there is probably less understanding about people with mental health disabilities. I have many, many friends because I've gone through various groups with people that have problems similar to mine. And some of those people have given up on looking for work. And that's really unfortunate.
Why is that? Just they don't get hired?
Right. Or if they do get hired, they get hired in positions that they feel is below their level. I know very many people with mental health problems that have a great degree of knowledge and ability to do so many different things. I know people that have written books and stuff, and at the same time, they're able to do that, but then when they try getting a position, some kind of clerical position, they're not there for them.
Do you sort of commiserate? Do you understand why people, especially with mental health challenges, might not tell an employer, especially after we talk about that Rutgers study? Leave it out, don't mention it. How do you feel about that?
Well, up until being employed with Rochester Rehab, I always tried to hide it, keep it a secret, because I felt like people wouldn't understand.
What do you think that they would say?
I felt like they would shy away from me, and I think there's a stigma that people with mental health problems are people that could possibly be dangerous or something, because there's so much in the news about people that commit crime that have mental health problems. And I think, you know, that kind of sticks sometimes to, you know, they see a person that says they have a mental health problem, they think, oh, you know, have to be careful, and this person could be dangerous. And that's not really true.
Yeah, that's a good example of what I've been taught is called availability bias. So if you think about just all workplace incidents, crime, violence, et cetera, often but not always, they are committed by people with a mental illness or mental health challenge. But that is such a small portion of the population of people with mental health challenges, and people with mental health issues, challenges, illness, are less violent as a population than people without. And so that availability bias maybe creates a bias against people like David who want to work. How do you feel now, though? I mean, how do you feel about the work you're doing for Rochester Rehab and maybe getting past a concern that employer might stigmatize
you? I feel terrific because I get lots of work that requires a lot of different skills. And it makes me feel good that they feel I can do the work there.
Are you concerned that there are a lot of friends and peers of yours who have, whether it's anxiety or other mental health challenges, though, that that they aren't going to find something as fulfilling, perhaps, as you found. Are you concerned about that?
Yes, I am, because I have friends that feel exactly that way. I have one close friend that's completely given up on work and that's so much younger than me. A little bit younger than Joe. I'll be 70 in June. And I want to stay working because, yeah. You know, I love having a place to go and I love the job that I do. And I feel very unfortunate for a lot of people that I know that aren't getting the kind of opportunities that I've had.
I wonder, Sarah Taylor, when it comes to that discrimination against people for simply revealing something about themselves, what is the sort of societal cultural change process? How are we going to address this? Is this bringing in people in HR, people in hiring, people in those positions, and sitting down and working through and talking about it? Does it have to do with how things are portrayed in the media? You know, what's the cultural change that is going to happen, and how do we sort of get there?
I think education at all levels, every aspect that you mention. We need more commercials, media commercials, visuals that are going to show someone, you know, with a disability or someone with ability integrated in employment, leading a radio show, anchoring a TV show or a news show. So we have to leverage the media. We have to leverage social media, education on social media. We have to have companies. I think it was just American Airlines. There was something in the news. They hired the first flight attendant with Down syndrome. And so that was on the news last week. And so I think it's going to take HR professionals coming in, human resources. It's going to also take our legal professionals to come in that specialize in employment discrimination. And it's going to take leaders of corporations and management to say, how can we're investing in this, not just saying we're investing in it. We're investing in it to make some movement. Mm-hmm. And it's going to call for having consumers and recipients and family members at the table, not you making the decisions and saying, here's what we have for you, that they're at the table and the conversations from the top down.
Joe, do you? I want to return to the subject of productivity, of getting work done here. And I want to go back to that theme because I think you mentioned earlier, and this is important. You know, as a veteran, yes, this country feels, and I think a lot of Americans feel like there should be sort of a debt of not only gratitude, but also, you know, an extension of opportunity for work to people who have served our country in the armed forces. But it sounds to me like you don't want it just to be this obligation that, well, here's a job for you because you served as an obligation, as opposed to saying, boy, you can bring tremendous value. You can be productive. And that's probably also another hurdle, I would think. What do you think about that? Changing the mindset of, well, we owe it to them to give them a job, as opposed to, wow, the benefits are tremendous.
I think, like Sarah says, education, but I like to use the word.
And if you could, Joe, try to get.
Okay.
I don't want to keep correcting it. An elder and a veteran.
But you have to sometimes. But I look at the education as key to know that this person has had a job for 2 to 4 years, or he might have been a career man or woman, mm-hmm. person in the military. So they come with some skills already, you know, and they come with some challenges. And to have that individual within your company, not only is an asset, but they come with benefits. And some of the benefits are tax related. Me being a job coach and a veteran, I can bring an individual into your company and you get a tax credit for that veteran or that person with a disability. So anybody that starts a job, they might start a job at doing the job at 50 to 75% of production. If I bring that veteran or that person that has a challenge into your company as a job coach, I come with him. And from the start, that productivity is up to 80 to 100%. Because I'm working with that individual one-on-one. That company is getting a tax credit. And it's a win-win situation. So I look at that as a company would be wise to jump on something like that. Because, I mean, you got somebody that's being trained. Your supervisor can go do other things. And you have somebody that can communicate between the supervisor and his fellow workers. And I think these are opportunities that are open, and I don't know if people know about them or not, mm-hmm. but they're great opportunities. I think that a service member has always been taught to accomplish the mission. And when you come home, your mission is to, you know, get into society and, you know, get back into a routine of taking care of yourself, working and making an income and making a life for yourself. And it's so good to have organizations like Rochester Rehabilitation Center. And I don't want to forget about the Veteran Outreach Center, which has helped me, or the VA, which has helped me. Organizations like that stick with you and help you. But I push actively that the Rochester Rehabilitation Center has helped me as an individual. They gave me the opportunity to come in, job readiness training, and then I had the opportunity to volunteer and then get taken on as a team member.
So let's talk a little bit before the hour's out just about what you ought to know about Rochester Rehabilitation in terms of the service they do and what they can provide in case maybe you know somebody, maybe it's you. Maybe before we get there, a little bit more in terms of the background on a lot of the themes we've been talking about. You know, Sarah brought up media, how you change culture, how it's presented, how, you know, what the images we see in various platforms, what they tell us about our world, where the Ruderman Family Foundation found that on television, less than 2% of characters on TV shows have a disability, despite the fact that 1 in 4 adults in the United States live with a disability. And then when disabled roles are included, they typically go to able-bodied actors. So we don't really see it in our media consumption. And when we do, it's not represented by people who actually have disabilities. And then one of our friends through Al Siegel shared this story, a community member here in Rochester who uses a wheelchair. Early in his career, he applied for a position, didn't get even a call back. Now, I didn't think anything of it. And years later, after many years in the workplace, serving in many professional capacities in many different offices, he happened to cross paths with a person he had submitted his resume 2 years before, and they had a chance to talk about it. And the person in the hiring role basically said they didn't call him in for an interview as they thought their offices wouldn't accommodate his use of a wheelchair. So years later, he still recalls that conversation because he wasn't given the opportunity to even come in to talk about what accommodations might be needed, much less his qualifications for that position. But things are, again, slowly perhaps, but things are changing. Rochester Rehabilitation, what do you want the community to know about what you do and who might benefit?
Well, our mission is work, wellness, and independence, and really helping people move along the continuum, whether it's driver's rehabilitation services, someone with a brain injury needs to learn how to drive all over again. We also have mental health services, whether you're going through a bout of depression and need a counselor. And we have an array of employment and job readiness services, getting individuals ready for competitive employment, as well as a business arm where companies that have printing work, hand finishing work, inspection work, thousands of documents and you need them to be scanned in the cloud, rather you have a need for cleaning services or packaging services. We also have a business arm where we have a fully integrated workforce that is ready to deliver a service. So we're very proud of it. And in the upcoming year, we will be providing employment services at the new Golisano Autism Center. We will be providing job readiness an array of vocational employment services. And one of the key assets that we do have, we have certified benefits counselors. Because when you talk about individuals transitioning from whether it's welfare or Social Security or benefits that are moving from one system to employment, helping them understand what transitional benefits look like, will look like. How do you pay your own rent? We talk about budgeting. We talk about how can you still work and maintain Medicaid for that medication that you need. So we also have benefit counselors that are on hand that really enhance our vocational and placement services. So we have an array of services and businesses, and we're here and ready to work with corporate companies, whether it's hiring the individuals that we train or whether it's a company that says we can outsource work to you, we'll take it.
And how to get in touch with you?
We have over on University Avenue, our number is 585-263-2690. And you can ask for myself, Sarah Taylor, or Jennifer Bellows. And our website is www.rochesterrehab.org. And that has information regarding all of our services as well as our business arm.
How many people are you serving a year now?
In a year, we serve anywhere from 4,500 to 1,000 individuals a year, and we employ over 150 individuals with and without disabilities.
Thank you for what you do and for telling the story. And I want to thank all of you. Sarah Taylor, Vice President of Employment at Rochester Rehabilitation. Now you know how to find them, and thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
You got it. Joe Robinson, a veteran and a peer job coach at Rochester Rehabilitation. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And I appreciate you and all the work that you've done over the years and for your service as well to this country.
And
same to David Witkowitz, who is a veteran and a data entry specialist at Rochester Rehabilitation. Continued success to you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. And listeners, I hope you've appreciated our dialogue on disability this week here on Connections. The engineer of the program is Rob Braden, and the producer is the outstanding Megan Mack. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you Friday on member-supported public radio.